Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here. Unfortunately, Greg Howard couldn't make it tonight. He's tied up and not sure when he's going to be home tonight. So I'm just going to do a solo show tonight rather than continue with the light and dark waters, which is what we're going to get into and which Greg was very anxious to get into. I'm going to do an introductory session on the Apocalypse of Baruch and talk about the Baruch's setting up this whole scenario and a little bit of background here. First of all, according to the author, and this is the Apocalypse of Baruch, translated by R.H. Charles, and he says it was written in the Syriac language, and that that's the only copy we have of the Apocalypse of Baruch in the Syriac version. And so I looked up the Syriac language to see what, you know, what's its relationship is to Hebrew and or Aramaic. And it turns out, at least according to Wikipedia, that Syriac is kind of like what we call Church Greek. It's basically Aramaic, which means very similar to Hebrew, but it was codified by the churches and was kind of like the language of the liturgy of the Middle Eastern Christian church. So still very similar to Aramaic, but it was more of a literary church language than the plain spoken Aramaic. So as I said, kind of like what we call Church Greek, where they make up their own words and sometimes their own definitions to distort the message of the Holy Scriptures. So in essence, it's Hebrew. It's Hebrew. So when we come across the word man, as we will in the very first chapter, we're talking about Adam man, Adamites. We're not talking about generic human of the colored races. We're talking about Adam, man, Adam kind. And so that's how I will read it when I come across the word man in these introductory chapters. Okay, the Apocalypse of, now he says here, translated from the Greek into the Syriac. I didn't notice this before. But nevertheless, we've already discussed the fact that the Greek man comes from the Hebrew, and since the New Testament is based on the Old Testament, they would have the Son of Man being son of Adam. That concept would have carried over into the Greek, and certainly it did into the Aramaic, no doubt about that. So let's get into chapter 1. And it came to pass in the 25th year of Jeconiah, king of Judah, that the word of Yahweh came to Baruch, son of Neriah, and said to him, "Hast thou seen all that this people are doing to me, that the evils which these two tribes which remained have done are greater than those of the 10 tribes which were carried away captive?" For the former, well, this has to be accurate literature. It has to be Israel. If it were Jewish literature, the Jews would never admit to doing anything wrong. "For the former tribes were forced by their kings to commit sin, but these two of themselves have been forcing and compelling their kings to commit sin." Oh, really? The people compel their kings? "For this reason, behold, I bring evil upon this city and upon its inhabitants." And this is just like Jeremiah. I mean, this reads just like the book of Jeremiah. "And it will be removed from me before for a time. And I will scatter this people among the nations," not Gentiles. And Charles makes the mistake of using the word Gentiles as the opposite of Israelite. It could be any nation, depends on the context. "That they may do good to the nations," or in the nations, or as nations. "And my people will be chastened, and the time will come when they will seek for the prosperity of their times. For I have said these things to thee, that thou mayest say to Jeremiah and to all those who are like you, in order that ye may retire from this city. Because your works are to this city as a firm pillar, and your prayers as a strong wall. So put this in historical context. Jeremiah and Baruch left the house of Judah, left Jerusalem with Zedekiah's daughters, tarried a while in Tapanhas in Egypt, then jumped across the Mediterranean to Spain, and then ultimately to Ireland. So there, you know, because Pastor Steve just did a recent study on good and bad figs. And some of the bad figs went to Egypt as well, but they were not part of the company of Jeremiah, Baruch, and Zedekiah's daughters. They had an entirely separate mission. That was to bring the royal bloodline to Ireland, where because the two daughters, Zedekiah, were of Phares, Judah, and the king line in Ireland was of Zerah, Judah. Thereby, those two bloodlines, the two sons of Judah, those two bloodlines would be brought back together. Okay, let's continue. Chapter 2, verse 2, because your works are to this city as a firm pillar and your prayers as a strong wall. Of course, Baruch is also renowned in Ireland. Chapter 3, and I said, O Yahweh, my Lord, have I come into the world for this purpose, that I might see the evils of my mother? Not so, my Lord. Of course, his mother is generic for Judah. If I have, and it may have been literally his mother too, if I have found grace in thy sight, first take my spirit, that I may go to my fathers and not behold the destruction of my mother. For two things vehemently constrain me. For I cannot resist thee, and my soul, moreover, cannot behold the evils of my mother. But one that we can't stand it either. We're having to look at the same thing today, the so-called mother church. But one thing I will say in thy presence, O Yahweh, what therefore will there be after these things? For if thou destroyest thy city and deliverest up thy land to those that hate us, how shall the name of Israel again be remembered? Remember, it's Israel, not just Judah. And even the Ezra and Nehemiah refer to themselves as Israel. Or how shall one speak of thy praises? Or to whom shall that which is in thy law be explained? Because it's only intended for us Israelites. Or shall the world return to its nature of aforetime, and the age revert to primeval silence? Okay, remember, there was an era of silence before Genesis chapter 1 and verse 2. And shall the multitude of souls be taken away, and the nature of man not again be named? And where is all that which thou didst say to Moses regarding us? Yeah, what about the Mosaic law? What happens? What about our heritage, our history, all this literature? By the way, only those of us in identity are reading this type of literature. Chapter 4. And the Lord said unto me, this city will be delivered up for a time, and the people will be chastened during a time, and the world will not be given over to oblivion. Now, of course, afterwards, the Maccabees had their day in the sun after this era, but that was full of turmoil also. Verse 2, dost thou think that this that is that city of which I said, on the palms of my hands have I graven thee? It is not this building which is now built in your midst. It is that which will be revealed with me, that which was prepared beforehand here from the time when I took counsel to make paradise and showed it to Adam before he sinned. But when he transgressed the commandment, it was removed from him, as also paradise. So we're talking about a metaphorical city. And after these things, I showed it to my servant Abraham by night among the portions of the victims. And again also I showed it to Moses on Mount Sinai when I showed it to him, the likeness of the tabernacle and all its vessels. And now behold, it is preserved with me, as also paradise. So it's all waiting for us to go back to at the restoration. Verse 7, go therefore and do as I command thee. So Baruch is kind of a reluctant witness, a reluctant prophet, just like, well, there have been several actually, But Jonah is the one I'm thinking of. Chapter 5. And I answered and said, I shall therefore be in great straits in Zion, because thine enemies will come to that place and pollute thy sanctuary and lead thine inheritance into captivity, and will lord it over those whom thou lovest, and they will depart again to the place of the idols, and will boast before them. And what wilt thou do for thy great name? And the Lord said unto me, My name and my glory have an eternal duration. My judgment, moreover, will preserve its rights in its own time. And thou wilt see with thine eyes that the enemy will not overthrow Zion, nor burn Jerusalem, but be subservient to the judge for a time. Of course, the taking of the house of Judah captive to Babylon for 7 years. They came back, had a golden age for a while under Ezra and Nehemiah, but that didn't last. Nevertheless, the bloodline was kept pure, otherwise Messiah could not have been born. So that house of Judah was maintained, and the purity of the seed line was maintained from Adam down to Yahshua. That is not to say that there were a lot of great kings, right? And a lot of not too many great leaders either. However, this bloodline was kept pure. And thou wilt see with thine eyes that the enemy will not overthrow Zion nor burn Jerusalem, but be subservient to the judge for a time. But do thou go and do whatsoever I have said unto thee. And I went and took Jeremiah and Adu and Sariah and Jabesh and Gedaliah and all the honorable men of the people, and I led them. See, there were some honorable men. And I led them to the valley of Cedron or Kedron, and I narrated to them all that had been said to me. And they lifted up their voice, and they all wept. And we sat there and fasted until the evening, just as we, the remnant today, weep for our sinful brethren, many of them sinning deliberately, others just out of ignorance and delusion because they don't have any love for the truth. So they actually believe the Jews are the Israelites of the Bible, when we've been trying to explain to them that if they're descendants of Adam, they are the Israelites, not the Jews. Chapter 6, And it came to pass on the morrow that, lo, the army of the Chaldees surrounded the city. And at the time of the evening, I, Baruch, left the people, and I went forth and stood by the oak. And I was grieving over Zion and lamenting over the captivity which had come upon the people. And lo, suddenly a strong spirit raised me and bore me aloft over the wall of Jerusalem. And I beheld, and lo, four angels standing at the four angles of the city, each of them holding a lamp of fire in his hands. And another angel began to descend from heaven and said unto them, Hold your lamps and do not light them till I tell you. For I am first sent to speak a word to the earth and to place in it what the Lord Most High has commanded me. Verse 7, And I saw him descend into the Holy of Holies and take from thence the veil and the holy ephod, and the mercy seat. Mercy seat is only the lid. And the two tables, and the holy raiment of the priests, and the altar of incense, and the 48 precious stones, wherewith the priest was adorned, and all the holy vessels of the tabernacle. Although it may be a reference to the entire Ark of the Covenant. And he spake to the earth with a loud voice, Earth, 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 hear the word of mighty God, and receive what I commit to thee, and guard them until the last times, so that when thou art ordered, thou mayest restore them, so the strangers may not get possession of them. For the time comes when Jerusalem also will be delivered up for a time, until it is said that it is again restored forever. Of course, that will not be the literal city of Jerusalem, although we will take possession of the literal city of Jerusalem as well. But man, that place has to be purified like no other place on earth. And the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up. Chapter 7. And after these things I heard that angel saying unto those angels who held the lamps, Destroy therefore and overthrow its walls to its foundations, lest the enemy should boast and say, We have overthrown the wall of Zion, and we have burnt the place of the mighty God. and the Spirit restored me to the place where I had been standing before. Chapter 8. Now the angels did as the angels did as he had commanded them, and when they had broken up the angles of the walls, a voice was heard from the interior of the temple after the wall had fallen, saying, "Enter ye enemies, and come ye adversaries, for he who kept the house has forsaken it." Yahweh has forsaken it. And I, Baruch, departed. And it came to pass after these things that the army of the Chaldees entered and seized the house and all that was around it. And they led the people away captive and slew some of them and bound Zedekiah the king and sent him to the king of Babylon. Now, of course, I don't even know if he talks about stealing away Zedekiah's daughters here. It's been a long time since I've read this book. And there's also the apocryphal book of Baruch, which is different from the apocalypse of Baruch. Maybe that information is contained in there. We'll see. Again, chapter 9, and I, Baruch, came, and Jeremiah, whose heart was found pure from sins, who had not been captured in the seizure of the city. And we rent our garments and wept and mourned and fasted 7 days. I guess that's what we're going to have to do, is fast 7 days as a remnant to wake our people up, to save them from the enemy. Chapter 10, and it came to pass for 7 days that the word of the Lord was upon me and said unto me, "Tell Jeremiah to go and confirm the captivity of the people unto Babylon." Remember, the house of Judah was to go for their good to Babylon for their chastening. 70 years of chastening is what Yahweh had in mind, and that's what happened. And 70 years later, they returned with Ezra and Nehemiah and set up a mini golden age of the law. Verse 3, "But do thou remain here amid the desolation of Zion, and I will show to thee after these days what will befall at the end of days." Okay, so this would be the apocalypse part, the prophetic or apocalypse, revelation. "And I said to Jeremiah, as the Lord commanded me. And he indeed departed with the people, but I, Baruch, returned and sat before the gates of the temple, and I lamented with that lamentation over Zion, and said, Blessed is he who was not born, or being born has died. But as for us who live, woe unto us, because we see the afflictions of Zion, and what has befallen Jerusalem. I will call the sirens from the sea, and ye, Lilin," or should that be Lilith? Lilin, L-I-L-I-L-I-N. "Come ye from the desert, and ye Shedim, and dragons from the forests, awake and bind your loins unto mourning, and take up with me lamentation and mourn with me. Ye husbandmen, sow not again, and thou earth, wherefore givest thou the fruits of thy produce? Keep within thee the sweets of thy sustenance." So Baruch is obviously very troubled by all of this. "And thou, vine, why further dost thou give thy wine? For an offering will not again be made therefrom in Zion, nor will first fruits again be offered. And do ye, O heavens, withhold your dew, and open not the treasuries of rain. And do thou, O sun, withhold the light of thy rays, and do thou, O moon, extinguish the multitude of thy light. For why should light rise again where the light of Zion is darkened?" There's a real patriot, really mourning the trouble brought up by the people of Judah. It's their own damn fault for being lustful and disobedient to Yahweh's laws. "And you, ye bridegrooms, enter not in, and let not the brides adorn themselves with garlands, and ye women, pray not that ye may be that ye may bear. For the barren shall rejoice more, and those who have no sons shall be glad, and those who have sons shall have anguish. For why should they bear in pain and bury in grief? Or wherefore again should mankind have sons," that is, Adam kind have sons, or wherefore should the seed of their nature again be named, where that mother is desolate, and her sons are led into captivity? From this time forward speak not of beauty, and discourse not of gracefulness. Moreover, ye priests, take ye the keys of the sanctuary. And of course Jeremiah had many curses for the false priests. Moreover, ye priests, take ye the keys of the sanctuary and cast them into the height of heaven, and give them to Yahweh, and say, guard thy thou house thyself, for lo, we are found false stewards. And you, ye virgins, who spin fine linen and silk with gold of Ophir, hasten and take all things and cast them into the fire, that it may bear them to him who made them, and the flame send them to him who created them, lest the enemy get possession of them. Chapter 11. Moreover, I, Baruch, say this against thee, Babylon. Now, he's done cursing out his own people, and now he's going to have a few words. Okay, Pastor Steve says there's no mention of the daughters in the Apocalypse of Baruch. That's too bad. That would have been fun. Would have been interesting if there were. Okay, chapter 11. Moreover, against Babylon, if thou hadst prospered, and Zion had dwelt in her glory, it would have been a great grief to us that thou shouldst be equal to Zion. But now, lo, the grief is infinite, and the lamentation measureless. For lo, thou art prospered, and Zion desolate, that you, grief, has prospered. Who will be judge regarding these things, or who, to whom shall we complain regarding that which has befallen us? O Yahweh, how hast thou borne it? How can you bear it? Right? Our fathers went to rest without grief, and lo, the righteous sleep in the earth in tranquility. Yeah, I guess he's asking to die here, so his troubles will be over. Verse 5, for they know not, or knew not, this anguish, nor yet had they heard of that which had befallen us. Verse 6, would that thou hadst ears, O earth, and that thou hadst a heart, O dust, that ye might go and announce in Sheol, and say to the dead, this is proof that the dead are still alive in the spirit, blessed are ye more than we who are living. Chapter 12, but I will say this as I think, and I will speak against thee, O land, which art prospering. The noonday does not always burn, nor do the constant rays of the sun always give light. Do not conclude or expect that thou wilt always be prosperous and rejoicing, and be not greatly uplifted and boastful. Well, obviously, the priesthood and the prophets all knew very well that Yahweh will punish us when we are disobedient. He promises us that over and over. But the problem with most priests and with the Judeo-Christians today is they're very arrogant. They're very self-willed. They think they know better than Yahweh, and therefore they have no use for his laws. Well, this is what happens, folks. All these churches are in total decline. The only churches still working are the mega churches, and they only work because they're like rock stars with the TV audience that they have. But that's about it. The rest of Judeo-Christianity is declining. Churches are closing daily. Attendance is down. They're the only churches that are really prospering in the material world are the mega churches with all of their high-tech, show business style. Verse 4, for assuredly in its own season wrath will awake against thee, which now in long-suffering is held in, as it were, by rains. And when I had said these things, I fasted 7 days, so 14 days so far. Chapter 13, and it came to pass after these things that I, Baruch, was standing upon Mount Zion, and lo, a voice came from the height and said unto me, stand upon thy feet, Baruch, and hear the word of the mighty God, because thou hast been astonished at what has befallen Zion. Thou shalt therefore be assuredly preserved. to the consummation of the time. So he was one of the few who was actually astonished by all this evil. The average Judeo-Christian today is not astonished at all. They think it's all normal. They think it's right. That thou mayest be for a testimony. Okay, this prophecy has been fulfilled by the preservation of this book. Verse 4, so that if ever this those prosperous cities say, why hath the mighty God brought upon us this retribution? Thou and those like thee may say to them, even ye who have seen this evil and these retributions which are coming upon you and upon your people are sent in its time, that the nations may be perfectly chastened. And then they will expect. And if they say at that time, when, thou wilt say to them, ye who have drunk the strained wine, drink ye also of its dregs. The judgment of the lofty one who has no respect of persons. On this account he had before no mercy on his own sons, but afflicted them as his enemies because they sinned. Very simple. Verse 10. They were therefore chastened, then that they might receive mercy. Okay, I guess there's some people just don't learn any other way except to have to go through tribulation until they start complaining to Yahweh, enough, enough tribulation. I'm ready to repent. But then there are Israelites and Adamites who never even reach that stage. They just perish. Verse 11, but now ye peoples and nations, ye are debtors, because all this time ye have trodden down the earth and used the creation unrighteously. For I have always benefited you, and ye have always denied the beneficence. And I answered and said, lo, thou hast shown me the method of the times, and that which will be after these things. And thou hast said unto me that the retribution which has been spoken of by thee will be of advantage to the nations. Of course, ultimately, the restoration. And that's the only thing that will be advantageous to us. Verse 2, and now I know that those who have sinned are many, and they have lived in prosperity and departed from the world, but that few nations will be left in those times to whom those words shall be said, which thou didst say. Well, first of all, the words of Yahweh are spoken only to the Israelite nations. They trickle down to the other nations by osmosis and by the foolish attempt of Judeo-Christian pastors to convert the heathen. But the whole point is being that we should not be, our name, Israel, should not be held up in derision because of our sins. Because they will say, where is your God? Where is your God, Yahweh, O Israelites? Where is he? He has abandoned you, if he exists at all. And this is how they will mock us, because we have abandoned him. Verse 3, for what advantage is there in this, or what evil? Worse than what we have seen befall us, are we to expect to see? Man, talk about evil. We're living in the most evil times of all. Verse 4, but again I will speak in thy presence. What have they profited who confess before thee and have not walked in vanity, as the rest of the nations, and have not said to the dead, give us life? But we always feared thee and have not left thy ways. That's a question mark. Well, actually, too many. Too many have left his ways. Verse 6, and lo, they have been carried off, nor on their account hast thou had mercy on Zion. Okay, apparently Baruch doesn't completely understand. I think Jeremiah must have, because Yahweh told Jeremiah very specifically that the captives in Babylon, carried off to Babylon, would be carried off for their good, and that they will return after 70 years, also for their good, and to reestablish a golden age in Judah. But Baruch is still just bewailing the sinfulness of his people Israel, and he just can't get over it. It's just tearing him apart. Verse 7, and if others did evil, It was due to Zion that on account of the works of those who wrought good works, she should be forgiven and should not be overwhelmed on account of the works of those who wrought unrighteousness. But obviously, the unrighteousness was just too much. Verse 8, but who, O Yahweh, my Lord, will comprehend thy judgment? Or who will find out the profoundness of thy path? Now, it's interesting that the Apocalypse of Baruch preserves the capital, all caps of L, capital L, capital O, capital R, capital D, which is Yahweh. Okay, so it must have been preserved from the Aramaic into the Syriac, from the Hebrew into the Aramaic into the Syriac. Because this is four caps. O Yahweh, my Lord, which is probably Adonai. And I would think Adonai is exactly the same in the Aramaic and Syriac as it is in the Hebrew. Who will comprehend thy judgment? Or who will find out the profoundness of thy path? Or who will think out the gravity of thy ways? Or who will be able to think out thy incomprehensible counsel? Or who of those that are born has ever found the beginning or the end of thy wisdom? And even David, he was probably the closest in, he is a man after my own heart, an Adamite after my own heart, Yahweh said of David. And David was obedient for virtually his whole life, except for a couple of bad episodes. One killing Bathsheba's husband, and he had a hard time maintaining order in his own family. He was a good general and a good warrior, but his household was troubled, always troubled. Let's continue. Verse 12, for the righteous justly hope for the end, and without fear depart from this habitation, because they have with thee a store of works preserved in treasuries. We sure hope so. We're trying to build up merits, not demerits. On this account also these without fear leave this world, and trusting with joy they hope to receive the world which thou hast promised them. Okay? Those of us in identity do not fear death. In fact, it means an end to the pain, suffering, and misery, debts, right? Doctor's bills, etc., etc. We won't have that to deal with anymore. That's a good thing. So we don't worry about death. But we know that we have a job to do. Yahweh put us here for a reason. And we muddle on through. And with good cheer. Yahshua said, when you know that people are persecuting you, be of good cheer. Don't let it bring you down, because you know your redemption draweth nigh. So just don't let it bring you down. They knock you down, get up again. They knock you down, get up again. Just keep fighting. Don't give up the fight. Run the race to the end. Verse 14. But unto us there is woe, who also now are shamefully entreated. And that time look forward, I think this should be treated. Entreat means to ask of. There should be, who also now are shamefully treated, it should say. And at that time look forward only to evils. But thou knowest accurately what thou hast made on behalf of thy servants. For we are not able to understand by means of any good thing that thou art our creator. He is lamenting. But again I will speak in thy presence, O Yahweh, my Lord. When of old there was no world with its inhabitants. Again, Apocalypse of Baruch confirms the gap between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2. There was a world without inhabitants. That did not happen since Genesis 1:2. Thou didst devise and speak with a word, and forthwith the works of creation stood before thee. And thou didst say that thou wouldst make for thy world man, that is, Adam kind, as the administrator, again, this is Genesis chapter 1, the dominion verses of Genesis chapter 1, referring to Adam kind, the administrator of thy works, that it might be known that he was by no means made on account of the world, but the world on account of him. Okay, he is saying that the world, this planet, this earth, was made on account of Adam, was made for Adam, for Adam kind. Why? Well, for one thing, we are supposed to judge angels, okay? We are the crown of creation, if we can get our act together. And Yahweh created us to be the rulers and the intermediaries, how should I put it, the intermediaries between the spirit world and the physical world, the highest of the physical beings, and the lowest physical being that can contain the Holy Spirit. So we're right in between there, the ideal lump, the ideal form of Elohim in the flesh. That's what Adam and Eve were supposed to be, the crown of creation. But they only had that for a very short time. Verse 19, and now I see that as for the world which was made on account of us, lo, it abides, but we, on account of whom it was made, depart. And the Lord answered and said unto me, thou art rightly astonished regarding the departure of Adam kind, but thou hast not judged well regarding the evils which befall those who sin. And as regards what thou hast said, that the righteous are carried off and the impious are prospered. Well, it always seems that way, doesn't it? And as regards only the good die, yeah? And as regards what thou hast said, man knows not, or Adam kind knows not thy judgment. Well, that's true. That's been true since the fall. On this account, hear, and I will speak to thee and hearken, and I will cause thee to hear my words. Adam kind would not rightly have understood my judgment if he had not accepted the law. And if his fear had not been rooted in understanding. But now, because he transgressed though he knew, yea, on account of this also, he shall be tormented because he knew. Eve was deceived, but Adam was not. And as regards what thou didst say touching the righteous, that on account of them has this world come, nay more, even that which is to come is on their account. It's going to get a lot worse. For this world is to them a trouble and a weariness with much labor. We Adamites will work by the sweat of our brows. And that accordingly which is to come, a crown with great glory. Okay? Between the fall and the restoration, there's a lot of trouble. But it's all going to be worth it once we get the prize, once we reach the finish line. Chapter 16. And I answered and said, O Yahweh, my Lord, lo, the years of this time are few and evil, and who is able in this little space to acquire that which is measureless? Chapter 17. And the Lord answered and said unto me, with the Most High account is not taken of much time, nor of a few years. As Pastor Steve likes to say, Yahweh is not limited to time. We are, but he isn't. For what did it profit Adam that he lived 930 years and transgressed that which he was commanded? So it would be nice to know how many years did Adam live before he transgressed. That information is not given to us. Or wherein did Moses, because he would have been a demigod for that period of time? Or wherein did Moses suffer loss in that he lived only 120 years, and inasmuch as he was subject to him who formed him, brought the law to the seed of Jacob, and lighted a lamp for the nation of Israel? Chapter 18, and I answered and said, he that lighted has taken from the light, and there are but few that have imitated him. That's for sure. A very few, a remnant. But those many whom he has lighted have taken from the darkness of Adam and have not rejoiced in the light of the lamp. Chapter 19. And he answered and said unto me, wherefore at that time he appointed for them a covenant and said, behold, I have placed before you life and death. And he called heaven and earth to witness against them. For he knew that his time was but short, but that heaven and earth endure always. Verse 3, for after his death these sinned and transgressed the covenant, though they knew that they had the law reproving them, and the light in which nothing could err, also the spheres which testify, and me. Yeah, the Israelites had all these things. The sure word of Yahweh, the priesthood, the prophets. And yet they still weren't happy, weren't satisfied. Why? Because the pleasures of the flesh and greed and other things were just too delicious. Delicious. Yes, we know Adam lived 930 years. In fact, it says so right here. But my question was, how long did he live before he transgressed? That, I don't think, is told to us anywhere. Verse 5, for now it is the consummation of time that is sought, whether of business or of prosperity or of shame, and not the beginning thereof. Because if a man be prospered in his beginnings and shamefully treated in his old age, he forgets all the prosperity that he had. Right? Oh no, I lost it all. As many of us do. And have to start all over again. I've had to do that a couple times, start all over again. Lost it all and start all over again. And again, if a man is shamefully entreated in his beginnings and his end prospered, he remember not again his evil entreatment or treatment. So it's all what's happening lately. He who laughs last laughs best. And we sure hope we laugh last. Verse 8, and again hearken, though each one were prospered all the time from the day on which death was decreed against those who transgress, and in his end was destroyed, in vain would have been everything. Well, if there's no restoration, then indeed everything is in vain. Chapter 20, therefore, behold, the days will come, and the times will hasten more than the former, and the seasons will speed on more than those that are past, and the years will pass more quickly than the present years. Okay, this is probably just saying it will seem like things are going faster and faster and faster, because inventions and technology and responsibilities and duties and bills will increase and increase and increase and increase to the point where we just can't keep up with it all anymore. And that, therefore, it makes it seem like it goes by a lot faster rather than just sitting around on your front porch drinking mint juleps watching your slaves pick cotton. I think that time would go really slow that way. Verse 2, therefore, have I now taken away Zion in order that I may the more speedily visit the world in its season? Now therefore hold fast in thy heart everything that I command thee, and seal it in the recesses of thy mind. Don't forget it. Don't forget what I teach you. And of course, we should not forget the lessons of the Holy Scriptures. Never, never forget. And then I will show thee the judgment of my might and my ways, which are past finding out. Go therefore and sanctify thyself 7 days, and eat no bread, nor drink water, nor speak to anyone. So this, I think, is the third fast. The third fast of Baruch here in these early chapters. And afterwards come to that place, and I will reveal myself to thee, and speak true things with thee, and I will give thee commandment regarding the method of times, for they will come and will not tarry. Okay, so these are the introductory chapters. This is the conversation that Baruch is having with Yahweh, wondering why all of these horrible punishments have come upon the Israelites, and lamenting for the evil of the Israelites. The next section is the prayer of Baruch, the son of Neriah, chapter 21. And I went thence and sat in the valley of Kidron, in a cave of the earth. Sounds like a hermit. And I sanctified my soul there, and I eat no bread, yet was I not hungry. And I drank no water, yet I thirsted not. And I was there till the 7th day, as he had commanded me. And afterwards I came to that place where he had spoken with me. And it came to pass at sunset that my soul took much thought, and I began to speak in the presence of the Mighty One, and said, O thou hast made the earth hear me, that hast made the earth hear me, that hast fixed the firmament in its fullness, and hast made firm the height of the heaven by the Spirit, thou hast called me from the beginning of the world, that which did not yet exist, and they obey thee. Verse 5, thou that hast commanded the air by thy nod, and hast seen those things which are to be as those things which thou art doing. Thou that rulest with great thought the powers that stand before thee, yea, rulest with indignation the holy living creatures who are without number, which thou didst make from the beginning of flame and fire which stand around thy throne. It's unimaginable. The manifold of the universe. Just think of all of the numberless living creatures on this planet alone. And we're just talking physical. It's millions and billions of creatures. And now we're not even talking about the spiritual creatures of the upper worlds. And those are filled with living beings too. So the universe is just filled with living creatures. And what about the other planets? We have no idea how many, you know, living creatures there are on other planets. So this universe is teeming with life, of course concentrated on planets, but the spirit world is teeming with life as well. So the universe is life. It's a living being. Thanks to Yahweh. Yahweh has given it all life. It is not a mechanical universe. It is a living universe. To thee only does this belong, that thou shouldst do forthwith whatsoever thou dost wish. Who causest the drops of rain to rain by number upon the earth, and alone knowest the consummation of the times before they come. Have respect unto my prayer. And the scriptures, the prophecies of the Bible, and of these apocryphal books, these prophecies are just absolutely amazing when you understand their fulfillment. And the only way to understand them is through the Christian identity message. Nobody else has any understanding of prophecy at all. Verse 9, for thou alone art able to sustain all who are, and those who pass away, and those who are to be, those who sin, and those who are righteous, as living and being past finding out. Well, certainly it's not for us to know all these things, but we'll know enough when we get restored. Verse 10, For thou alone dost live immortal and past finding out, and knowest the number of mankind. And if in time many have sinned, yet others, not a few, have been righteous. Thou knowest where thou preservest the end of those who have sinned, or the consummation of those who have been righteous. All right? It's two different places. You're going to one or the other. Verse 13, for if there were this life only, which here belongs to all men, nothing could be more bitter than this. Yeah, I agree. I mean, as he said earlier, it would all have been pointless if there is no restoration. It would all have been vain. Verse 14, for of what, Baruch is a philosopher. For of what profit is strength that turns to weakness, or the food of plenty that turns to famine, or beauty that turns to a hateful thing? For the nature of man is always changeable. For we have by no means been from the beginning what we are now are, and what we are now we shall not afterwards remain. Well, in spite of all of the craziness of the modern world, the legacy of the white race, the inventiveness of the white race, is simply beyond belief. You know, space travel, education, science, quantum mechanics. It's unbelievable what our race has accomplished. But yeah, if we all die, if we all die in our sins, it will have been in vain. Baruch, I feel your pain. But regarding everything that comes from thee, do thou inform me. And regarding everything about which I ask thee, do thou enlighten me. So he wants to know. He wants to know what's going to happen. How long will that which is corruptible remain? And how long will the time of mortals, which would probably be Ish in Hebrew, be prospered? And until what time will those who transgress in the world be polluted with much wickedness? Command, therefore, in mercy, and accomplish all that thou saidst thou wouldst bring, that thy might may be made known to those who think that thy long-suffering is weakness. Yeah, Yahweh, you haven't been punishing me. You must be weak. Okay, that word is Enosh, not Ish. Thank you, Pastor Steve. Mortals, Enosh. And show to those who know not, and let them see that it has befallen us and our city until now, according to the long-suffering of thy power. Yes, he's very patient. Because on account of thy name thou hast called us a beloved people. Not that we have deserved it, but it's because he created us for a specific purpose, and he knows that some of us will fulfill that purpose. Verse 22. Every nature, therefore, from this onward is mortal, at least everything on this planet. Remove, therefore, the angel of death, and let thy glory appear, and let the might of thy beauty be known, and let Sheol be sealed, so that from this time forward it may not receive the dead, and let the treasuries of souls restore those who are enclosed in them. Well, that's asking a lot. That's asking a lot, Baruch. Yahweh would have to think hard on releasing all those souls, especially if they've been sinful. Verse 24, for there have been many years like those that are desolate from the days of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and of all those who are like them, who sleep in the earth. Again, the Bible does not teach the destruction of our consciousness at physical death. It's only the death of the body. Our consciousness lives on to be resurrected and restored at the judgment day. And remember when Yahshua came, the souls came out of their graves to announce to the living, those who are to the embodied, that the Messiah had come. They were not dead to the universe. They're only dead to this world. On whose account? Okay, let me, this is an important verse. Let me reread it. Verse 24. For there have been many years like those that are desolate from the days of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and of all those who are like them, who sleep in the earth, on whose account thou didst say that thou hadst created the world. He created the world for the righteous Adamites. That's what this verse is saying. This is verse 24 of chapter 21. Very important verse. Verse 25. And now quickly show thy glory, and do not defer what has been promised by thee. Yeah, come quickly, Lord Jesus. Get this over with. I'm tired of seeing my people suffer from, out of deception. But we know, since they lack love for the truth, they invite this deception upon them. Delusion, as you call it, and stupor, as Baruch calls it. And it came to pass that when I completed the words of this prayer, that I was greatly weakened. Well, we can see that Baruch, this is a very impassioned prayer. He is deeply affected by the apostasy of his people. And it pains him greatly, as it does us in Christian Identity. We see the errors of our people. And it pains us to watch our people suffer. But we know that the only way out of their stupor, out of their delusion, is to finally realize the reason why they're suffering. They may be in denial now. No, it's not because we're sinful. And many of them are even denying their own suffering. Maybe some of them are just fat and lazy and don't really have any daily experiences. Maybe they're sitting around watching television. But we know one thing. As they grow old, their bodies get weaker and they have aches and pains. But, hope springs eternal, that maybe I won't go to hell, even though I'm not obeying the law. That's kind of the mentality of the average Judeo-Christian. They've been promised there'd be a rapture, and they don't have to endure the tribulation, but they will. They're not going to avoid that. And it's already happening. It's obvious to us that it's already happening. And it's going to come knocking at their door. Every Judeo-Christian, this tribulation is going to come knocking at their door. And Yahshua is going to ask them, why haven't you obeyed my law? Because not everyone gets into the kingdom. Those who have not obeyed his law, he's going to slam the door in their faces and say, I know ye not. And when that day comes, these Judeo-Christians, I can't imagine the misery and terror. It's going to be far worse than Baruch is experiencing here. Far worse than that. That's a wailing and a gnashing of teeth is what they're going to experience because they have been disobedient. Okay, folks, I hope that provides a pretty good indication or introduction for what Baruch is all about. And then next week we will return to the light and dark waters, the racial message of the apocalypse of Baruch. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition. See you next time.